Okay, Erev to everybody. Welcome to the weekly Torah in Motion, Parshat HaShavuah here. It's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Robinson. I don't know if Rabbi Robinson knows that the reason he's speaking this week is in honor of the coronation of King Charles, that having been born in Scotland, and we planned this, even though he picked this week, we planned it so it could be the weekend of the coronation. I think it's a beautiful thing, but that's a whole other story, what's going on for Shabbos and the chief rabbi's participation. But as you will hear, Rabbi Robinson was born in Glasgow, I believe, in Scotland, and he studied in England. He got his in addition to smicha from Or Torah Institute in Israel, Rabbi Riskin's, doing Rabbi Brander now. He has an MBA on the lives of rabbis, the working lives of rabbis. I'm going to put such an interesting topic. He serves as the first rabbi of Jewish students in Cambridge University, and he came to America in 2005, where he's been leading Lincoln Square Synagogue. And if I am correct, you have one son and five daughters. Is that correct?
And four grandchildren.
And four grandchildren. Baruch Hashem. Very, very nice. That's the most important part of the introduction. So with that, Rabbi, I hope you had time to relax. And Vakasha Parshat Emor.
Okay, thank you so much. It's nice to see you. And I really appreciate the invitation and the ability to teach. Truth is, I'm not so much. We settled in this Parsha long before the coronation.
And we're not supposed to tell anybody that. That's a secret.
You're run an efficient organization. These things are decided many, many, many months in advance, which I greatly appreciate. I'm actually going to speak. I see a few congregants online, so it's nice to see you. And I do intend to speak a little bit. Whenever I do speak about royalty, I get a mixed reaction, because some Americans are Whigs and some are Tories. Some are... pro-monarchists, and some are, spirit of the old Boston Tea Party. So I don't like to be too polarizing in anything I do. I will speak a little bit on Shabbat in my drasha about the coronation, but that's not tonight's topic so much. Talking about a different hachtara, talking about Shavuot as is hidden and revealed in this week's parsha. We'll say, actually, that the Sfira account, for those people who say the kind of the Kabbalistic sphera, Malchut Sheba Malchut is the last night, Erev Shavuot, is the combination of Sfira to Omer is Malchut Sheba Malchut, the kingship upon kingship, and kingship squared, if you like. So that's an important theme that in these days we're counting up to the real coronation, if you like, of the Ribono Shel Olam, which is on some level counterintuitively, perhaps not Rosh Hashanah, but it's in fact Shavuot. I want to cut to a chase right now and share my screen with you, which I can do thanks to Rabbi Kelman. And one participant. I can't share. Oh, multiple. Now I can share the screen. There we go. Excellent. Had to change something. And here we have a chapter which occupies a major part of our parsha. A fascinating topic to have, and I hope that you have discussed at some point over the weeks of Sefer Vayikra, is the entire structure of Sefer Vayikra. We'll say words about that, or the theme of the book of Vayikra, the third book of the Chumash, Torah Kohanim. People think that it's a book of Korbanot, of sacrifices. Clearly, it is not only a book of sacrifices. If you think about Parshas Kedoshim, we had last week, Li'avta L'recha Kamocha, don't cheat in business, false weights and measures, honor your parents. Parsha, the book of Vayikra, is about a lot more than just what takes place in the Beit HaMikdash. And that is kind of true when we get towards the end of our our Parsha, chapter 23, Perek Kaf Gimel of the book of Vayikra, is a Parsha of the Moadim, of the holidays, of the Yom Tovim. And I want to look a little bit at that. And I want to look particularly at what the Torah tells us about Shavuot, what it doesn't tell us about Shavuot, and what it reveals and conceals in equal measure, quick as a flash, about Shavuot. Let's start at the very, very beginning, just as sort of an introduction. So we learn as follows. I hope my font is big enough for everybody to see. But we learn at the very beginning, chapter 23, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. God spoke to the Jewish people saying, speak to the Jewish people, tell them, Moadei Hashem Asher Tikrotam Mikra Kodesh Elahem Moadai. These are the, or proclaim to them the Moadim, the appointed festival times, the Mikra Kodesh, those which days will be declared holy. From a technical point of view, I'm no grammarian, no great expert in the Hebrew language. I want us to be sensitive, or it's been taught to be sensitive, to words that we think of maybe lazily as synonyms, and all words that roughly and approximately mean the same thing, and we broadly speaking get the gist. It is entirely possible that the word moed, which means an appointed time, and a mikre kodesh, somebody which is declared holy, are subtly or distinct concepts. We'll see that. And although the Torah here is using words to describe what we call yontif, in fact, there are another word that comes up later on, shabbaton, moadim, mikra kodesh. These are words that the Torah is not sort of lazily, you know, mixing up, but most probably or most definitely mean distinct things. We'll see an example of that a little bit. So what are the moadim? So fascinatingly, and a little bit sort of what we would not expect, the first moed, and this, you know, is not true of every time the Torah lists the Yom Tov cycle. Torah here starts off with Sheshes Yamim Taaseh Melacha V'Yom Hashvi Shabbat Shabbaton Mikra Kodesh Kol Melacha Lo Tasu Shabbat Hi Lashem Kol Moshvoteichem. There is a mitzvah to keep 6 days, work 6 days, and have Shabbat. Work for 6 days and then have Shabbat. We're not going to dwell on it now, why the Parsha of Moadim in Sefer Vayikra begins with Shabbat, but it is an important question. And then the Parsha re-begins. Ela Moedei Hashem Mikra Kodesh. So Shabbat is apparently not a Moed, but it is a Mikra Kodesh. Ela Moedei Hashem Mikra Kodesh Asher Tikrotam B'Moadam. The following are the Yom Tovim. Now, I'm going to read the next three verses about Pesach just to set up a sort of a paradigm, which I will assure you, and if you don't believe me, you can check for yourself or I'll reassure you, is sort of a paradigm for almost every yontif that the Torah describes in Parshas Emor. The first one is Pesach. I use that phrase advisedly because the biblical name for Pesach, 7-day festival that we keep, of course, is Chag HaMatzot. But in fact, the Torah describes the day on which the Korban Pesach is offered as a distinct festival. B'chodesh harishon ba'arba asar l'chodesh ben arba'im Pesach la'ashem. You will offer up on the 14th of Nisan the Korban Pesach. The reason why these verses, in contrast to, or Pesach, is described so briefly, in contrast to, as we'll discover, Shavuot and Sukkot, is most probably because the Torah has already told us everything we could possibly want to know or need to know about Pesach already in Parshas Bo. So here it really is summarizing. It is the festival of matzos. Shivas yami matzos ta'ochelu. You will eat matzos for 7 days. Now, that's the first thing we're told about Chag HaMatzot. Eat matzos for 7 days. B'yom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh Elachem Kol Melechet Avudah Lo Tasu. The first day is a Yom Tov. Don't do any melacha. And the last thing we're told is, V'kravtem, verse 8, V'kravtem Ishel HaShem Shivat Yamim B'yom HaShvi Mikra Kodesh Kol Melechet Avudah Lo Tasu. You shall offer up special sacrifices to mark the Yom Tov over 7 days. And on the 7th day is also Yom Tov. Do not do any work. Now this, unusually short, is a paradigm for every Yom Tov that we encounter in Parshat Emor. There is an emphasis, we're told three things about every Yom Tov. You're not allowed to do any work, any malacha, malachat avodah, slightly distinct from Yom, from Shabbat. The rules of Yom, the laws of Yom Tov, the laws of Shabbat are different, which is most probably why the Torah separates Shabbat and Yom Tov, even though it includes it. You're allowed to cook, etc. First thing is don't do malacha. The second thing is offer up the sacrifices, whatever they might be. Doesn't specify. There are special sacrifices, Ishel HaShem, offerings to God. And on each one of the Yom Tovim, there is a special mitzvah. On Yom Kippur, I fast. On Sukkot, actually double mitzvah, I Sheik Lulav and Etro, Arba Minim, and I dwell in the Sukkah. On Rosh Hashanah, I sound the shofar. On Pesach, as we've seen, I eat matzahs. So the Torah describes a mitzvah that I do in the temple, Yishel Hashem, korbanot that are offered up, and a mitzvah that I do wherever I live. Wherever I live in the world, whether Bazman Abayit and Obazman Abayit, whether the temple is standing or not, there are mitzvahs that you do in your own home in each one of the Yom Tovim. On Pesach, and these are outlined in Parshat Emor. It's a fascinating thing. Rabbi Kalman, I don't know, I know you're a mutz, so you can just like wave, but I'm just asking the question. Have you ever had Professor Yoni Grossman speak on Torah in Motion?
We tried, but we haven't successfully.
He doesn't like to speak in English.
That's okay. Rabbi Yoni is going to share in Hebrew. It's okay. Hebrew is fine for us.
So one of the things that I'm proud, one of the things I'm proud of is one, Yoni Grossman is one of my highest parshas Emor for Friday night dinner. And I asked him the following question, which is, why is it that you would think, if we think about the theme for Parsha, and we're going to get to Shavuot in just a second, but if you would think about the theme for Parsha, for the book of Vayikra, it is, as I said before, what most people think is about Korbanot, or at least the world that revolves around the sanctuary, that is rooted and flows from the sanctuary. That's Vayikra, Torah Kohanim. Somehow or other, everything flows back to the Shekhinah, God's presence dwelling amongst us. By contrast, the book of Bamidbar is the Torah for the rest of us. What is the Torah for not the Mishkan, but the Midbar, the Machaneh, the camp of Israel? The mitzvahs that haven't been covered yet, as they, it's the story of the rest of the people, not the Kohanim and the Levim. And that explains why many mitzvahs are, you know, some fall in Vayikra, some fall in Bamidbar. So if I were to ask you the following question, in which book would you expect the Torah to thoroughly describe the sacrifices, the korbanot of each Yom Tov? And in which book would you expect the Torah to thoroughly describe the mitzvahs you do at home for every Yom Tov? I would have thought that Parshas Emor, Book of Vayikra, would tell the story fully of all the details of every korban, every musav offering of each Yom Tov. That's where I'd be told how many goats, how many bulls, how many sheep, etc., how many sirezim, etc. That would be Emor. And Bamidbar, Parshas Pinchas, where we have another chapter of the Moedim, that's where I would learn about lulav, shofar, sukkah, matzah, etc. It's exactly the opposite. Even though here in Vayikra, the Torah does, for each moed, just remind us, don't forget, korbanot, yishel Hashem, the focus in Emor of the mitzvahs that we do in Yom Tov is the, and you'll see why I'm emphasizing this point in a second, is the mitzvahs that are nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash, that you do in all places, anywhere, and at any time. So I once asked Professor Grossman, Yoni Grossman, who is possibly, arguably, one of the greatest living Orthodox Bible experts today, why that is. And he said to me, good question. So I thought he said, good question, which I took to mean, as a good kind of chassid of the Rebbe, I took to mean, I'm not worthy yet of knowing, I'm not ready yet to hear the true answer. So Bezrat Hashem, one day I'll get to the true answer. But that is relevant for what we're talking about. Sorry, I'm just going to wet my throat for one second. That is relevant for what we're about to discuss, as you'll see. So let's go back to the Chumash and look at the next festival. So the next festival, and this, of course, is the point of the class tonight, is Shavuot. And we get to Shavuot in an unusual way. Because the word Moed, and I don't mean exclusively necessarily, but the word Moed means a Yom Tov with a date. It's an appointment, an appointed time. 14th of Nisan, the 15th of Nisan, the 1st of Tishrei, etc. We arrive at Shavuot in a different way. That is by counting. So verse 9 tells us, after we're done with Pesach, Vayedibar Hashem al Moshe l'Emor. God spoke to Moses saying, Dabar ben Yisrael v'yamar t'lehem ki tavo la'aretz asher ani noten lachem k'tzartem et k'tzira. When you come into the land, you shall cut your harvest, You shall bring the first crop, which we understand by tradition to be barley, to the Kohen. And Omer is a measure. Bring a measure of offering to the Kohen. You wave it. You don't actually burn it. You wave it before God. From the day after, let's just accept the rabbinic tradition for right now. Let's not relitigate a 2,500-year-old debate. The day after the second day of Pesach, you bring the Omer. Vasitem biyom anichem et haomer keves tamim ben shenatah la'ola l'Hashem. The certain offerings that are brought. U'minchato shnei esrim sola belula. There are certain offerings that are brought. Okay. And then the Torah tells us that's all happening on the second day of Pesach. Verse 15. Sfartem lechem mimecharat ha-shabbas miyom abiyetach haomer tenufa sheva shabbatot t'mimot t'hiyena. And you shall count from the day after Shabbat, beginning of Pesach, from the day that you brought the Omer, 7 weeks, 7 perfect weeks you shall count. Ad mimacharet haShabbat haShvi'it tisbru 50 yom, count 50 days, yikravtem mincha chadasha laHashem. And then you will offer up a new offering. Now, note that the Torah doesn't say at 50 days comes another Yom Tov. It doesn't say that. It says after 50 days, you'll then bring another korban. Yikravtem mincha chadasha laHashem, a new offering, which by tradition is the new wheat offering. Mimoshvoteichem tavir lechem tenufa, you shall bring bread that is to be waved. Shtaim, 2 loaves. Shtei alechem. Shnei nesrim sola tiena chametz tefenu bikurim laHashem. First for brawn offering, fascinatingly, at first, the first of the wheat harvest, a chametz offering. Chametz is never offered on the Mizbeach. Doesn't the Torah say that you bring shtei alechem, which are chametz on Shavuos? Doesn't say you offer it up on the, I was this number of days old when I learned this. Not today, but fairly recently. The shtei alechem are not actually brought on the Mizbeach, on the altar, because chametz never goes on the altar, ever. They are waved before the altar. Fascinating. Okay, and then you bring the accompanying 7 lambs for Shavuot on that day. You'll offer up these sacrifices. Now, I know what you're saying, Rabbi Robinson. You just told me that the Torah in Parshas Vayikra does not talk about the korbanot. All we've just learned is korban. I'm dizzy. I'm tuning out. I'm checking my emails. What are you talking here? So the answer is, Shavuot is an exception. Shavuot, the Torah hard up focuses on these mitzvahs because at root, the korbanot that are being described here are the ones that are accompanying the grain. The omer offering of barley and then the wheat offering of the bread are accompanied with specific offerings. But the Torah here links Pesach and Shavuot through agricultural sacrifices, through barley and grain, and counting to link the two. And therefore, we're told these offerings are up. And then, verse 21, "Kratem be'etzem ha'yom hazeh mikre kodesh yelachem, kol melechat avodat lo tasu." And then, once you have offered up this special Shavuot offering of the wheat, the chametz, then you shall declare, "Kratem be'etzem ha'yom hazeh." You shall declare on that day a yontif, kol melechat avodat lo tasu. Don't do any labor. It's very interesting. Not only do we know Shavuot's date isn't mentioned in the Torah, it's kind of more than that. The identity, Shavuot is not called a moed that you can make a fixed date in your calendar. The Torah is saying, offer up the barley, count 50 days, offer up the wheat bread, and once you've done that, declare, okay, it's Yom Tov. A person who really wants to push things to the great limit could make a case that Shavuot outside the time of the Beit HaMikdash is not a Yontif. Could make that case. Elsewhere in the Torah, of course, it talks about the Moedim and Shavuot as its own Yom Tov, Atzeret, etc. But in this context, Shavuot is a festival that exists only in the temple as part of the agricultural rites. You see why I mentioned this? Because remember what I said before, and you can take my word for it, or just look on a few verses. Every Yom Tov, without exception, in Parshas Emor, has the pattern. Don't do any malacha. Offer up a korban to God, a special korban up for the day, and the mitzvah that you do at home, the matzah, which we eat even in Toronto, even in New York, even outside the Beis HaMikdash. Blow the shofar, you fast Yom Kippur, you sit in a sukkah, you wave lulav and etrog. Every Yom Tov has its mitzvah for all seasons and all times and all places. So we wait anxiously to see what is the Torah going to tell me to do on Shavuot. We finally arrived at Shavuot, but what mitzvah do I do at home nowadays at Shavuot? So the answer, of course, as we know, is there is no mitzvah. There is no special mitzvah for Shavuot. Unlike all the others, there's no special mitzvah for Shavuot. But here's a fascinating thing, and you can speculate why. But here's the fascinating thing. Instead of the Torah therefore going on and saying, okay, it's time for the next Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah, it actually gives a mitzvah in the place you would expect to see the Shavuot mitzvah. You shall eat Shavuot all day and all night. You know, it doesn't say that. It gives a mitzvah. You shall eat cheesecake. It doesn't say you should eat cheesecake. It gives a mitzvah that is not specific for Shavuot, but is in the place where you would expect to see the Shavuot mitzvah, were there such a thing. Verse 22. Ubekutzruchem et kitzir artzechem. When you harvest your harvest of your land, lo techale pa'at sadcha. Do not destroy the peah, the corner, leave the peah, the corner of the field. Bekutzrecha, when you harvest it, beleket kitzircha lo telaket, and when you go through your harvest and you drop or you forget to, or you overlook certain things, lo telaket, and is that lo telaket, the gleanings you don't take, laani beleger tazovot, leave them for the poor and for the stranger, ani Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. This is absolutely fascinating. Because the Torah does not give us a mitzvah that is for Shavuot in all times and all places. But instead of just going on to Rosh Hashanah, which it does in the very next verse, verse 24, the seventh month, Shabbaton, Zichron, Trua, Mikra Kodesh, there's a Yom Tov called Rosh Hashanah, or we call it Rosh Hashanah, we blow shofar. Instead of just going on to Rosh Hashanah, it gives us a mitzvah that doesn't apparently belong here. Now, Ibn Ezra says, the reason why the Torah mentions Peah here is because after speaking so much about barley festival, the wheat festival, so it's a relevant thing to remind people to leave Peah. But that's not really satisfactory, and it's clearly something more going on here. You could speculate why there's no special mitzvah for Shavuot, never find an answer for that. You can certainly try and find an answer as to the questions, why does the Torah insert the mitzvah of Peah, of leaving the corner of the field for the poor, precisely where you would expect the mitzvah for Shavuot to be? And this is, to my mind, an extremely important question. And it does, and if we have time, we'll look at other relevant ways in which even some of the parshiyot, the verses we've looked at before, describe, you know, hint at the Matan Torah aspect of Shavuot. But this alone is enough to give us certainly a lot of food for thought. I just need to move a bar so I can go over to my different screen. Here's a photograph by the great Israeli photographer Adi Ness what, you know, leket and shichacha must have actually been like. This is a photograph, prize-winning Israeli photographer Adi Ness, who makes his credit. This is his in photographic reconstruction, imagining of what Ruth and Naomi's life must have been like. You know, the contemporary equivalent is the lowest of the low, the absolute indigent in Machane Yehuda or Shuk Carmel at the end of the day amongst all the trash, picking up that which nobody else wants. Fascinating and a jarring image. But anyway, let's get to Rashi. Rashi answers my question. I'm going to be chutzpedik, and I'm going to decline to fully accept or push Rashi to tell us more. Rashi says, the English here is on the front of you, and I'll read the Hebrew, because you always get a little bit more out of the Hebrew, even though this is a translation. Rashi says as follows, and I'll just highlight this. Bekutz Rachem, when you harvest. So Rashi gets right down to this. Oh, we actually asked a separate question first as well. Because Chazar v'shinei la'avor alayim v'shinei la'avim. Rashi is bothered, first of all, by the fact that the mitzvah peah is not a new mitzvah. We had the mitzvah of leaving the corners of the field to the poor in last week's parsha. In last week's parsha, Parshas Kedoshim. As a quick aside, I'll say one of the things which came up in Daf Yomi a few weeks ago, fascinating Gemara about a concept of tzaddik harum, I think is a phrase, a trickster tzaddik. There's such a thing as a chassid shota, tzaddik arum. Trickster tzaddik is an individual who gives somebody enough tzedakah so they don't qualify for payah. And therefore, he's able to keep his entire field for himself. So there's an awful lot to say about, and Chazal were very, very insightful about the precise parameters of the mitzvah of payah. But Rashi points out, we had this mitzvah last week. So now we have two questions. Why does the Torah repeat so quickly the mitzvah of Peah when we just had it in Parshas Kedoshim? And of all places, why does it put it right here between Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah? Chazar b'shina ha'lavor aleim shnei lav. So Rashi says it's there to give a double punishment to people who disobey. Okay. Have to take that answer. Rashi notes the repetition, the superfluity, and then he goes on to say, "I'm a Rabbi Abdimas, a Rabbi Yos. Ma raha katov litne be'emtzah regalim. Why does the Torah place the mitzvah of Peah in the middle of the Moadim?" Now, Rashi is not specifically asking my question, which is why it's specifically here where you expect to get the Shavuos mitzvah. But nonetheless, Rashi certainly answers the question. What is Peah doing right here in the middle of the Moadim of the Yom Tovim? Pesach v'etzer mikan, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim v'chag mikan. In between Pesach and Shavuot, Peah, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Sukkos. So what's Rashi's answer? L'lamadcha, to teach you, shekol hanoten leket shichecho peah la'ani karui, that anybody who does these mitzvahs of giving the corner of the field or the gleanings, or the forgotten sheaves to the poor properly, which, by the way, is really the biblical form of obligatory tzedakah. Obligatory tzedakah. Tzedakah is a mitzvah. We're going to learn about it in next week's parsha. There is a mitzvah to lend money to the poor. There's a mitzvah to give money to the poor. But that mitzvah is not necessarily obligatory at all times. That doesn't mean to say that I have to give you my money and I have to give this money in my pocket that I was planning on using to buy a car to you. Tzedakah is a mitzvah, but the nature of the chiyuv of tzedakah at any one time is complicated. Peah is not complicated. I have a field. I have lots of fields. All the fields, the corner of all my field, all the corners of all my fields have to be left to the poor. There's nothing, you know, no way of sort of dancing around it. So this is a biblical paradigm of tzedakah. And Rashi says, L'mancha shekol anot and lekat shichah peah la'onik ra'ui, malin alav ki'ilu banu beis ha'migdash v'hikri korbanot b'tocha. The Torah here is coming to tell you that if you give tzedakah properly, it's as if you built the Beit HaMikdash and offered up korbanot sacrifices, which is absolutely fascinating. And Rashi here asks the question, why do we have the mitzvah of Peah in the middle of Parsha of the Moadim? And he answers it, it equates it with the other mitzvahs to come and tell you that giving tzedakah is as good as whatever else we're talking about, which according to Rashi is korbanot. So sometimes you get to offer a korban, sometimes you don't, But if you give tzedakah, that's good enough. Rav Aaron, listen, I'm going to quote Rav Aaron in a moment, but Rav Aaron Zatzal points out in a that the Sefer Yireim, Rabbi Eliezer of Meitz, a early listing of the 630 mitzvahs, points out that although we say in the Yom Tov davening, when we say in the Dov, Ish kamat nat yadoh, Sher b'yirchat Hashem, lo yireh p'nei reikam, there's a mitzvah when you go to the Beit HaMikdash on Yom Tov, on the Shalosh Regalim, on the three festivals, to bring extra korbanot, sacrifices. Ish kamat nat yadoh, according to what you can afford, you give sacrifices to Hashem. Sefer Yireim says, you give sacrifices to Hashem, you bring extra korbanot, like you got shlomim, or you give tzedakah. Included in the mitzvah of Ish kamat nat yadoh is giving tzedakah. They're like, they're equivalent. This is a fascinating idea. And that's what Rashi reflects here as well. The Torah is kind of telling you there will be times you can't offer up korbanot, but you can, at least when you're living in Eretz Yisrael, give tzedakah, give payah. So with the greatest effort, and this is Rashi at Kandashir, finishing with 28 minutes to spare. With the greatest efforts to Rashi, I want to push on a little bit further. Because if this Rashi was in Parshas Pinchas, if the mitzvah of Peah came and interrupted the Torah while it was describing the sacrifices for each Yom Tov, I would be dancing around the room. This is an unbelievable pshat. This is an unbelievable Rashi because he literally, you know, answers a specific question instead of telling me, you know, Torah interrupts telling me about the korbanot of the Yom Tovim to tell me about Peah, to tell me that if I leave a field corner, it's as if I offered up a korban. But as we remember, that's not the focus of the Yom Tovim and Parshas Emor. The focus of the Yom Tovim and Parshas Emor, where all the detail is the mitzvahs we do at home, is the shofar, the fasting, the matzah, the lulav and etrog, and the sukkah, and the missing mitzvah of Shavuot. So what can we say to answer that specific question? How does the, what does the inclusion of the mitzvah of Peah here tell me specifically about Shavuot, and how does it stand in, and how does it hint maybe, if we're so fortunate, can we find a hint in the inclusion of the mitzvah of Peah at precisely this moment that might tell me something about Shavuot? And I hope and I believe the answer is yes. And this is something which some commentators deal with obliquely and some deal with a little bit, you know, directly. And I think, by the way, we'll see commentators that sort of, you know, dance around this issue or say this kind of issue, but there is an aspect of, it is fascinating, and I don't think it's a stretch to say, the Torah is inviting us to consider the mitzvah of general mitzvah of chesed, of kindness and tzedakah and charity, as the way that we commemorate, we celebrate Matan Torah. The pasuk that we say, many of us say every Friday night, in Eshet Chayil, Torah chesed al shona. Torah is a Torah of chesed. It is a Torah of chesed. Baruch Brachas tells us it's a Torah which is not of chesed. Yeah, selfish Torah, a Torah that you keep for yourself. You don't teach other people, share with other people. That's a Torah that's not of chesed. But there is some identity, some inseparable identity between Kabbalat Torah and the commitment to tzedakah and chesed. We'll see that answer given in various forms. First of all, and I promised you, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and I want to share with you an incredible insight, because Rashi is not the only commentator to ask the question, why do we have Peah right here in the middle of Parshas Emor, the middle of the Yom Tov? And we saw Rashi, told you already, the Ibn Ezra says, well, we're talking about harvest, so it's always good to be reminded that there's a Yiddish way, a Jewish way of doing a harvest. The Ramban, Nachmanides, gives a more precise answer, or more answer, like, you know, focused here specifically. And after going through Rashi and the Ramban and Ibn Ezra, Ramban says as follows. Manachon Be'inai, and I didn't, even though you can get easily English translation now, the Chabad translation of Ramban is on Safari, thank God. The Ramban says, Manachon Be'inai, And what the truth in my mind is, b'kutzrochem et ketzir artzichem. Pasuk about when you harvest your fields, leaf peah, remez l'ketzir hanizkar b'rosh ha-parsha, is coming to reference, link the harvest that we had really just a few verses ago. In other words, the mitzvah of Omer, of harvesting the barley and bringing it to the temple. Yomar ki kishatavo el haaretz ukatzertem et haomer reishit ketzirchem. To tell you that when you come to the land of Israel, the second day of Pesach, get up, one man goes down to the field, the appointed person goes, and he cuts the omer, the barley, lo techalep etz hasadeh ahu, letzorech haomer. Even that guy whose job it is to bring the omer, barley, to the temple, even he has to leave the corner of his field to the poor. Even that guy, lo techalep etz hasadeh ahu, letzorech haomer, velo techalep haleket, lomar shalot tidcha mitzvahi et halavin ha'el. That even this guy who's asked to be the one that will bring the barley to the Beit HaMikdash for the Omer, even he has to keep the mitzvah of Peah. Now you might think that's weirdly specific. The Torah inserts an entire pasuk to tell me that a mitzvah that applies to one guy a year has to keep a mitzvah. Clearly the Ramban is hinting at a larger idea. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zechat Tzadik Lerocha, says as follows. The Ramban posits a different theory to explain the sudden appearance of these mitzvahs in the context of the Omer and Shavuot. He suggests that the Torah here teaches one not to harvest a field in its entirety, even for the purposes of the mitzvah of the Omer. We may not allow the reaping of the Omer to override the mitzvah of allocating part of the field for the poor. According to his interpretation, the Torah is concerned lest one forgo his social responsibility out of a certain ideology. I am, this day, this season, the most important farmer in the land of Israel. I have been designated to do a mitzvah that the entire, by the way, Omer is so important because it releases all the crop and from the Isser of Chadosh, and now I can eat it. So this is extraordinarily important. I am, this mitzvah is huge, and the Jewish people are depending on me and my field to bring the best barley, and they're very specific about the best barley that was brought or which field was chosen. Even that guy has to leave a corner of the field. In come the poor to harvest. What do you think? You're dead out. Don't you know what this field is? How dare you? This is not an ordinary field. This barley is going to the base of Mikdash. The Torah comes and says, when you harvest your, yeah, even for that harvest for the Omer, the poor get to come and take the Peah and the Leket and the Shichacha. Because the Torah does not let you push away what he says, one forgo his social responsibility out of a certain ideology. Doesn't let you push away concern and compassion for the poor because you happen to think, or indeed factually are, engrossed in hugely important ritual mitzvahs. Just because you're doing the biggest mitzvah ben adam l'makom imaginable doesn't mean to say that you're released from your social responsibility. Incredible idea. When faced with a conflict in the obligations of the Omer offering and the needs of the poor, one may opt for the former. One may very reasonably figure that the great communal mitzvah of the Omer should take precedence over the rights of the poor. After all, the entire nation may not pertain to the new grain before the Omer offering is brought. How could this national interest be over the needs of the few paupers? The Torah therefore comes to negate this line of reasoning. The obligations towards the needy should not be discarded by the mitzvah of harvesting the Omer. And one, I think, now Rav Aaron doesn't say this explicitly and the Ramban doesn't say this explicitly, but I think they're saying this implicitly. I think they're absolutely answering my question. That here Peah is listed exactly at this moment where had there been a mitzvah, were there such a thing as a Torah deraita mitzvah that we do on Shavuot, even when the temple is not in existence, it would have been here. There is no such mitzvah. So instead, the Torah gives us a mitzvah of Peah here, because Peah is a proxy. It is a mitzvah that we can project, we can understand what is being meant. And this, by the way, I think is a real sort of proof, a real hint. That's why I say in a flash of revelation concealment, we see a hint to Shavuot here. As Meshech Chachma will say explicitly, the Torah here, by introducing Peah and Omer at this point, Peah and Chich and Leket at this point, is telling us how we keep the Torah, how we keep the whole Torah. It's a proxy for all sorts of values that we bring to Torah, that we have in mind when we accept Torah. And it's telling us more than just the mitzvah of Shavuot, and which happens to apply every single day, not just in Shavuot, it's Tzedakah. What Rav Aaron is saying, the Rabban is saying, is the Torah is telling us that when we receive the Torah, it is certainly not just about, no matter how involved we are in mitzvot for Hashem, responsibilities for other people can never be passed aside. And fascinatingly, the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha, a Kohen of Tzvinz, spells this out explicitly, very, very interestingly. And he says as follows. The Meshech Chachma has a very long, remember 2 years ago, my parsha was Bechukotai. I spoke on the Meshech Chachma Bechukotai about when Rome, Berlin, and Jerusalem, etc. So here's another Meshech Chachma. Meshech Chachma says as follows. Oyitachen, it's possible. Ki tede'un ki matan Torah betzer lo haya rak alachukim. He reads, of course, takes it for granted that Shavuot is always the festival of Matan Torah. But what kind of Kabbalat Torah, what kind of Matan Torah did the Jewish people get on Shavuot? Not just on Chukim, not just on what we might call ritual laws. Ki'im al hanibusim hamuskalim. Also, now he's doing more than saying ben Adam l'makom, ben Adam l'chavero, between man and God or man and his fellow man. He's saying the Torah commanded us to do things that we like to think we would have done anyway. Things we think we would have known that we had to do. Kamo chanina la'ani la'ger, for example, generosity to the poor. Ki belo emuna b'Hashem, alul shekol adam liyot kaparitz chayot lo yachmol v'lo lo yachmol. Because, and even though he uses the phrase emunah, faith in gods, he means more than just sort of a belief, a sense of commandedness. I think he means like a yiras Hashem. Unless a person understood the standards to which God will, you know, demands of him and will hold him accountable, people would be selfish and ungenerous. And if you don't believe me, then I have to look around at the world where there's little yiras Shamayim and much abuse and exploitation of the poor. So Matan Torah was about things that we would never have known about, Chukim, never have dreamt of tefillin. And it's also about things that I like to think I would have kept anyway, but in fact, most probably I wouldn't. And then he goes on to say, that's why the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, honoring your parents, is in the Torah, because although we like to think, yeah, for sure, we'll always be great children, we'll always honor our parents, we know that that's not always the case, in many circumstances when that is not the case. And therefore, Shavuot is, and then we'll just get to the end of this, without this faith in God, which again, I would say really contemporarily means a fear of God, a generation would curse its parents. That's why, according to the Meshech Chachma, the mitzvah of Peah comes where it is, the stand-in, the proxy for Shavuot, to tell me that Shavuot is not so much as Rav Aaron is saying, you know, between man and God and man and his fellow man, but between things that we would never have dreamt of, that God demands of us, and things that we think we would have known anyway. Both were commanded on Shavuot. And this notion that on some level this is, whether according to Meshech Chachma, whether according to Ramban, this is really the heart of Torah. This is the heart of Torah. A sensitive, an awareness that even things which I intellectually might know I ought to do, I won't do unless I have that imminent sense of commandedness, the thunder, the lightning of Matan Torah, the Yira of Matan Torah. and also the reminder that serving God and receiving the Torah is not just about ritual obligations, not just about running to shul three times a day, forgetting about other people. It is rooted, absolutely rooted, in the sensitivity to other people. And that, of course, is the famous Gemara that when the converts, the would-be converts, came to Hillel and Shammai and asked to be converted. I'll just remind you of this beautiful Gemara, Masechet Shabbat, Shuv Maisi Begoy Echad. It once happened with a Gentile, Shaboli Fnei Shammai, Amar Log Erni, Amanach, Talimini, Kolatura, Kishani, Omed, Al Regal Achad. Shammai, great sage, convert me to Judaism while I stand on one foot, teach me the whole Torah. Dach bu ba'amat ha'binyan. Shammai threw him out. Bo'al ifnei Hillel, man came to Hillel, gairi, and Hillel converted him. Amar lo, he said, you want to know the whole Torah while you stand on one foot? Da'alech snei l'chavercha lo tavit. Da'alech snei l'chavercha lo tavit. That which is hateful to you, do not do to other people. Zuhi kol ha'Torah kula, idech pirushahu zilgam. That is the entire Torah. The rest is commentary. Go learn. And it's almost as if the Parshat Emor is saying that. You want to know what mitzvah you're supposed to do in your own homes to commemorate Shavuot? So there is no such mitzvah. But there is no one thing you do on Shavuot and Shavuot alone. But you want to know a mitzvah that helps you understand the essence of the day, clearly about more than just, you know, what a farmer does, but somehow cuts the heart of this Yom Tov we call Shavuot, is a sensitivity to other people. It is the notion that what is harmful, hateful to other people, do not do to them. That is the Torah in its entirety. That, I think, is I'm not saying this is proof. How do we know? I'll finish in one second with a quote-unquote proof, if you like, that Shavuot is indeed the festival of Torah and can be seen to be the festival given the Torah, even from the point of view of the Chumash, of the Mikra, the Pshad alone. What I'm saying, of course, is not Pshad and the Chumash per se, but I think, nonetheless, that it is a sustainable Pshad. Now, what the Torah here is teaching is revealing, and the point of this class is not to sort of prove to you through the mitzvah peah that for sure the Torah was given on Shavuot, but I'm pointing out to you that here at this moment, usually the Torah diverts our attention away from a specific mitzvah for Shavuot, from mitzvah that in many, many, many ways is, if you like, a proxy, a stand-in for everything we understand about the essence of Judaism, which is not just tzedakah, but when you actually look, and we haven't got time to go into this now anymore, but look at the specificity of the mitzvah of peah in particular and how it's understood and what it means. This is not tzedakah in a general throw some a dollar in the pushka on your way out of shacharit, but this is an extremely thought out and sensitive, demanding mitzvah. Finish with this last thing, because I know we want to leave time for questions and I'm not good at reading the screen, whatever. So a lot of the contemporary rabbis who deal in Pshuto Shomikra, if you like, many of my rabbis and teachers, new teachers, come to them late in life, Meidan, Yoh Ben Nun, and others, all each in their own way, look for references and kind of hints of the Matan Torah aspect of Shavuot, even though it's not mentioned in the Torah. Rav Yoh Ben Nun, and that's, you know, and describes, you know, the way that Pesach and Shavuot are linked as sort of as a journey. From the beginning, and then you count 50 days, you come to Shavuot, and Shavuot is not a day in the calendar. It's a day that you get by counting 50 days on from Pesach. He wants to sort of say very clearly that that's a parallel to the journey of the Jewish people out of Egypt. The bringing of the chametz, the anti-Pesach, is a way of showing that, you know, the destination has been arrived at. We left Egypt eating matzah only when we get to Har Sinai, and we bring chametz through, you know, redemption. We're already kind of freed. But Rav Meidan, Yaakov Meidan, one of the Rosh Yeshiva Har Etzion, says something which I think is really worthy of an awful lot of attention. I'll finish with this, not apropos of Omer, of Peah, or not apropos of Peah and Shavuot in its particular location. We've moved on from that. There's one other insight into the kind of the Shavuot hiding almost in plain sight in Parshat Emor. Rav Meidan, this is an English Dvar Torah based on a published article by Rav Meidan, but he says as follows. Chazal, however, understood this anticipation, longing is a symbol of a much deeper, more inherently spiritual yearning. Talking about the counting of the Yom from Matan Torah. Is there any textual basis in the Torah for this association, or does it come to us purely through oral tradition? Can you find a remez in the psukim itself of the Omer equaling the journey to Har Sinai? Sure enough, we may detect at least an allusion to the Matan Torah aspect of Sfirat HaOmer, which can perhaps enhance, our understanding and appreciation of the precise nature of this anticipation. The mitzvah that counted the Omer parallels a different mitzvah. 1 second. Giving you anticipation. The mitzvah of counting the Omer parallels a different mitzvah that of counting the years with respect to Shemitah and Yovel. There's one other time in the Torah where you count, and you also count 49, count 7 lots of 7. That's next week's Parsha, Shemitah and Yovel. As the Torah discusses at the beginning of Parsha's Bahar, every 7th year is observed as a Shemitah, sabbatical year, in which agricultural activity is forbidden. These prohibitions apply as well on the 50th Yovel Jubilee year, which features an additional element, the emancipation of slaves, the return of all real property to the original owner. The High Court is required to count the years leading up to the Yovel, 7 sets of 7 years, parallel to the 7 weeks counted annually Pesach and Shavuot. So if you're a real Pshuta Shel Mikra kind of nuts, if I can use that expression, he said to you, where does the Torah allude in Sfirat HaOmer, the 750 days to Shavuot, the giving of the Torah? The answer is nowhere. Nothing to do with it. So that's the following question. Okay. Do you agree that clearly the mitzvah of counting the Omer and the count of 50 days and the counting of the 7 cycles of 7 years to the 50th Yovel are linked? The answer to that, of course, is yes, obviously. The Torah calls for the sounding of a shofar in Yom Kippur at the beginning of the Yovel year, which perhaps corresponds to the shofar blast at Sinai. Now, this is not so fanciful, because even though the mitzvah of blowing the shofar is mentioned in Parshas Emor, the Torah never uses the word shofar in connection to Rosh Hashanah. It uses the word truah, which we learn by association to be shofar. But the only times the Torah uses the word shofar in the Chumash is to describe either the mitzvah of blowing shofar at the beginning of the Yovel year or the shofar sounded at Har Sinai. What more, the very term Yovel, which means trumpet, used to describe the 5th year, refers to the shofar blast and brings to mind the Yovel sounded at Sinai. Thus, just as the counting of the years leads towards the Yovel, which clearly relates to the revelation of Sinai, so does the parallel mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer express our anticipation towards Matan Torah. Truth is, at the end of the 4th chapter of Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara tries to figure out most precisely how many shofar blasts you have to hear in Rosh Hashanah, is based on this kind of association of shofar Rosh Hashanah, the 7th month, etc. So it is not, according to Rav Meidan, once you factor in the Yovel, which very clearly at least nods, winks towards Har Sinai, this association of Sfirat HaOmer and by extension Shavuot with the giving of the Torah is at least, within reach. It's not there explicitly, it's in reach. For whatever reason the Torah chooses to conceal, leave it for the oral tradition to fully expound, this connection between Shavuot and the giving of the Torah, but you see it in numerous ways, flashes of hints in Parshas Emor that really hint to this idea that Shavuot is, at the end of the Omer, is really a festival of Jewish nationhood and the events at Har Sinai. Okay, that's what I got. So let me hand over to Rabbi Kalman, who will administer a brief Q&A.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeshikor. If anybody wants to unmute themselves and ask a question, there are a couple questions in the chat box or comments if you want me to look. Rabbi.
I say that my measly dinner is now stone cold.
That's right. You eat while I talk. Okay. Eat cheesecake. Yes, that's the mitzvah of Shavuos. Okay. Megillat Rut. That's very nice, but that's not really a mitzvah in the Torah. That's a minhag. I don't know what it was like in England, but I can tell you many shuls in Toronto growing up did not read Megillat Rut on Shavuot. My father told me in the Shtiblach that the Shtiblach didn't read. I still think Adayom Hazeh. So it's very nice, if I can say, while you eat, Rabbi. When I get to a real question, we'll let you answer. So Megillah Rut is a beautiful custom, and it's not really a mitzvah in the Torah, if I can say that. Okay, now Gershon's giving me grammar here. Leket, okay, via Lashon Nofel B'Lashon in English. Oh, Leket.
Leket shira. Is the Leketesen.
Gershon, what are you saying?
I'm saying that Leket Ketzircha is delicatessen.
Oh, delicatessen. Oh, he's making a joke.
Oh, yes, I see.
I hope it's a joke.
It's a bilingual pun, which proves that the original of the Torah was the King James's version.
Well, you can might say it's appropriate. What you really mean is the mitzvahs of the Torah are delectable.
They are delectable. That's
delectable.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Aru says, the language of the text Omer is in the plural. Svartem lachem. It does not, right. It does sound as if every barley farmer is to bring an Omer from the first barley he harvests, of course, which is not the case. The Omer of barley could be the first of the Bikurim, as the two loaves of wheat bread on Shavuot are the next Bikurim. Okay? That, Rabbi, I'll let you comment on that.
No, I mean, that's a good point. And I think that, you know, that little deal that we had, that little discussion we had about the Rambam, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, as much as, and I assume that many, you know, Torah in Motion lectures and incredible speakers you have, you know, the notion of really delving into the text of the Torah, allowing the Torah to speak as, you know, before, therefore to even help understand even more what the commentators are saying, it's a worthy and beautiful exercise. None of us are Karaites. You know, we're not rejecting, throwing out any kind of oral Sadducees, but throwing out the oral tradition at all. So how would, you know, with the precise meaning of verse or whatever. Indeed, even if that was the case, that everybody brought Omer, everybody brought the Shtei Alech, not, you know, the point the Ramban is making is even more well taken. It's not dependent on the guy, the one guy, even when you are doing a, even if it were the case, everybody who brought their, you know, brought had to bring an Omer to the temple, they would still have to keep the mitzvah payah. The fact that you're busy with a mitzvah, that, you know, the writer with a mitzvah ben Adam Lamakom, as I once put it to somebody back in the days when I lived in London, the fact that you are busy running for Shabbos doesn't mean you're allowed to double park outside Carmelis and Golders Green Roads to buy your chalas. The fact that you're busy with a mitzvah doesn't mean you're allowed to park in the disabled bay. That was a specific example I once rebuked. When in my younger and much fiercer days, I rebuked a total stranger who parked in a disabled parking bay outside a kosher bakery in London, ran in to buy chalas. And she said, but Shabbos is in at 3:25. It doesn't make any difference. So again, I've given up trying to rebuke total strangers, trying to be a little bit more down the cuff schut. But the point, nonetheless, for all of us is well taken. No matter how busy you are with mitzvahs, doesn't give you the right to ignore mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveru.
That's because there's nowhere to park in New York City. You live in Manhattan, parking is impossible. Anyway, hey, Gershon, I don't fully understand your comment. I'm sorry with you. I might have been yan, so I'll let you ask.
Okay, the Meshech Chochmah uses the word emunah.
Yeah.
And I'm connecting that to Amat Habinyan.
Okay.
There
again, you go. What precisely emunah means in different circumstances, okay, of course, is, you know, is well taken and a worthy, you know, worthy discussion. But I think that's a little homiletical.
It is. I'd like to have your email address so I can send you my Kiddush. What is your email?
Okay, great. Rabbi Kamel will happily pass it on to you.
Okay, send it, Gershon. I'll forward it along afterwards. Okay, Thank you very much, Rav Shaul. A pleasure.
Thank you. Enjoyed this very much, as ever. Yeah. And thank you very much, Rabbi Kama, for everything you do. And Yeshe Koach. And look forward to Bezrat Hashem, another opportunity if I'm granted one.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Just a couple of quick announcements. Rabbi Liebtag is not going to be able to give a shiur this Sunday. He mentioned he's going to be in Memphis. And anyways, it just with the hour time difference, he got messed up. And it's hard for him, so there's no shir. But of course, Rav Yoel Binun will be giving part two of his shir at 9:30 B'Ivrit on Kedushat Yerushalayim and Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. So that'll be this Sunday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern B'Ivrit, Rav Yoel Binun. Those, I think, who were there last week, really very, very powerful shir. He's a powerful person and very, really one of the leaders. Yoni Grossman, of course, the younger generation. But Rav Yoel Binun, really one of the founders of the whole approach to Tanakh. That's in on Sunday in Ivrit at 9:30. Of course, my regular shir on the Siddur tomorrow morning 9:30. We're at the second brach of Kriyat Shema. Also next week, Mark Herman, Dr. Mark Herman, will be making his debut on Torah Motion. He recently moved to Toronto to take up a position at York University. He will be giving a shir on the world of the Gaonim, a four-part series on the world. Gaonim is sort of that missing link between the Talmud and the Rishonim, you know, between Rashi and the Rav Sajid. You know, you heard of the Gaonim, but you don't really know anything about them. So he will be giving a four-part series beginning Wednesday, I believe, Wednesday, 1 p.m., if I'm not mistaken. I will, of course, we'll send out all the stuff by email. And Malka Simkowitz will be giving a special shear, one per shear this Thursday at 2:15 after Marty Luxon shear on the 10 commandments or the non-10 commandments. Okay. Anyways, everybody be well. Looking forward to learning with you soon. Please invite a friend to come join us, any of our many shiurim. And thank you very much. And if we don't see you before, Shabbat Shalom and all the best. Okay. Laila Tov, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. This was terrific, Rabbi Coleman. Could you say, don't forget to send me that email address, please.
Yeah, but see, okay, if you send me this thing, I can forward it to you, but fine, I will do that. Yeah, Rabbi Rahm's fine. Vakasha. Okay, everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, Laila Tov, everybody. Be well. Yes, Rav Yoel Binun Shir, I see United, but Rav Yishu, all our Shirma recording, including Rav Yoel Binun Shir, was recorded. Okay, Laila Tov.